general strike and a protest, and has made statements like on your early tape where he's clearly supporting the coup, even though he was not a signatory to the document, the Carmona Accord, that his own father, who I interviewed also, signed. I interviewed Lopez's father, not Lopez, and his father told me that he had signed not a not the Carmona Accord, but
we have 10 seconds.
He signed. He told me he signed a attendance sheet when you can see videos that there was a call to sign the accord.
Roberto Lovato, I want to thank you very much for being with us. We're going to link to your article in Foreign Policy called The Making of Leopoldo Lopez, a closer look at the democratic bona fides of the rock star of Venezuela's opposition. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking in Manhasset, New York, at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation Shelter Rock tomorrow night, Thursday night, for the 70th anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombing of Hiroshima. And next week at the Venice Biennale, we'll be broadcasting from Venice, Italy. We have a job opening for a social media editor, full-time job here in New York. Go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
Hi, this is John Schuck, host of Religion for Life. We all remember Mr. Rogers, the peaceful guy with the sweater and the tennis shoes and welcome to my neighborhood. But he was countercultural and a fierce peacemaker. Author Michael G. Long has written Peaceful Neighbor, Discovering the Countercultural Mr. Rogers.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, along with North Portland Community Building Group, Proper, of the We Can Do It Together community concert. Local politicians, community activists, faith groups, and artists will join in a day of unity, song, and prayer in Kenton Park on Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. This concert will feature a variety of local artists that will rally for unity in this time of unrest. Again, that's the We Can Do It Together community concert, Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Kenton Park at North Kilpatrick and Delaware in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Stood in the oncoming crude, and it's oil. now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. In the well-charted waters of the Nantucket Shoals was a ship run aground full of oil, we were told. In a week's worth of rough winter weather and waves, the boat started cracking and it could not be saved. It was 7.6 million gallons this time. Consider the danger and think of the crime. As it poured out a slick, stretching into the tide for over 100 miles, yes, it came deep, it came wide. It's oil, oil, pouring in the sea. Oil, oil, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. There's talk of some writing found in the ship's log, saying one of the helmsman's unfit for his job. And the ship's gyro compass was 6 degrees shy. Their charts were outdated, they tried to get by. And it's oil, have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Both of these ships, like a great many more, got registered in through Liberian doors. Inspections are quick, regulations are few. Just sign on the line and go find your crew. And it's oil, it's oil, pouring in the sea. Oil, oil, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down the shoreline where the water used to be. One of these ships was the Olympic Games. The Argo Merchant was the other one's name. If things don't get better, well, they'll probably get worse. If you can't drink the oil, oh, you might die of thirst, 'cause it's oil. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah.
And good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio on KBOO Community Radio. My name's Paul. I'll be with you for the next about 50 minutes after that long song. Thank you, Steve Forbert, for speaking out through your music and songwriting after the BP, whatever you want to call it, the geyser, undersea geyser, that was so absolutely and continues to be so absolutely devastating. And of course, that was played in honor of all the people who showed up out there last week during the Portland uprising against Shell and drilling in the Arctic to avoid such a scenario as was seen down in the Gulf of Mexico just a few years ago there. And that's where we're going to be talking about that and lots of other things. I've got a whole bunch of articles I want to cite, read you a little bit from, get you to think about, spur thought discussion to the extent that we are able, to the extent that you are willing and interested. And the number is 503-231-8187. Definitely encouraging people who've, you know, held back. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of people who listen to this. I have no idea how many people listen to this, but I'm sure there's are a number of people who listen to this who haven't called in, don't call in, don't regularly call in. If you're, and certainly women, younger people, non-male gendered people, to call in and, you know, let your voice be heard. And we really like to have a wide conversation, and we like to hear new voices. We like to hear the old voices. But today in particular, I'd really, really love to have some different voices on the air. So that's what I'm asking. You do what you want. And yeah, I want to start by, as I have made it my habit now to do, to give you some news of some community events coming up, because we no longer have a community calendar. Maybe that's something we could bring back. I know there's some logistical difficulties with that. I know people have asked for that at front desk, where I'm going to be after this show. People occasionally call up and ask, could we have a community calendar? Can they put an event on the community calendar? So I don't know if that's something that you want to make happen. You and you are not involved in KBOO, you can get involved and maybe help make that happen. Or something else. Anyway, coming up 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the ever-present nuclear threat, that's tomorrow. Tomorrow, Thursday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza. That's right there on the west side of the river at on the waterfront, NATO Parkway and Cooch, sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, Almsworth United Church of Christ, Alliance for Democracy, American Friends Service Committee, APANO, and a whole bunch of others, a whole long list, including KBOO. For more information, visit www.oregonpsr.org. This weekend, on the first anniversary of the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Don't Shoot PDX is hosting discussions, training sessions, and an art project to honor the life of Michael Brown. That'll be Friday and Saturday at the First Unitarian Church at 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue. That's at Salmon. And then there'll be a Mike Brown Day of Remembrance Community Art Project and Activist Trainings August 9th, 12:30 to 5 p.m. at the Jade/Apano Multicultural Space at 8114 Southeast Division. And there's a whole long schedule. Fridays, 3:30 to 8 p.m. at First Unitarian Church. There'll be a number of panels. And I won't list all those because there's several panels with several people contributing. And then on day two, Saturday, also at the First Unitarian Church, 1 to 5, there'll be panels as well. And then a question answer with Black Lives Matter activists from 4:30 to 5. And all this you can find out. I know they have a Facebook page, Don't Shoot PDX. I'm sure you can find that on the web. Let's see what else. I think I had a couple of things written down. Oh, Decline of Western Civilization. I think Penelope Spheres, is that her name? Anyway, I know she's the director. I think she might even be in town. That's August 7th and 8th at Hollywood Theater. Two separate events. And that's about all I have for now. So if anybody has any events, you can write me at paulrkboo@gmail.com. Or you can call up here, leave a message for me. 503-231-8032 is the front desk number. I'll be there after this program. So people remember? I mean, things move so fast now. There's so many disasters and just so much news, so much media, so much happened in our lives. People think back to the BP apocalypse disaster. Not a spill, it was a gushing, raging torrent coming out of the bottom of the seabed there. The feeling of absolute impotence and horror and disgust and pain that I certainly felt, it just went on and on and on. You remember that? Well, do we want to see something like that again? I mean, there's spills going on every day all over the world. Every pipeline spills. I mean, if you want to be obsessive like I do and look up oil spills or pipeline spills, it's a list. I think I printed off most of it once. It was, I don't know, like 8 pages front and back, something like that, tightly spaced. So this happens. This is like regular functioning of this machine that we have constructed. We, they, somebody, it's constructed, and we are all caught in, and the screws are tightening and coming undone at the same time. Because, we all know this, right? We all know this. It's extreme energy is because the easily available sources have largely been taken up, so they go to what used to be economically unfeasible, tar sands oil, gas fracking, and of course the technology rises to meet the beast's need, insatiable beast's need. And so we're caught in this system where we're forced to keep consuming the products of the beast and feed the beast and work for the beast. And we can't seem to slay the beast or tame the beast. I don't know. What's the right metaphor? It's all metaphors because I don't know what this thing is. Does anybody know what this thing is? So we don't want to see that in the Arctic. And people rose up. People are getting it. People are getting it. Small percentage of us at this point. Most people are still too caught up in the rat race of our lives, and the pressures and the conditioning. Let's be real about that. So some people are getting it, but most people aren't getting it or aren't quite getting it, haven't quite got it, aren't really getting it, don't want to get it. And unfortunately that last day, I don't know if I shouldn't apologize because I had another show planned out, but I probably would have focused a lot more on that shell no action had I understood what was truly unfolding. I was, out of town for over a month, helping my mom move out to the Pacific Northwest, and I kind of missed a lot of the initial meetings. I barely knew that was happening, and then I was really busy here anyway. Enough about me. And so I just didn't know. And of course, apparently most or nobody knew about the Greenpeace action. That was just came out of the blue. But I would have focused more on that my last show and, try to get even more people out there. But, my little part in this scheme of things. But I had no idea when I did my show last week what was going to happen. That was high drama anyway. So I was out there and, involved, and I just hadn't gotten enough sleep, not because I was all that active in it, but I hadn't gotten that much sleep. So I went home because I have a difficult time with sleep sometimes, and to take a nap, and I got back and it was all over. And, it's kind of unfortunate. I mean, since I was mainly just watching what was going on, I could have stayed through the end, but I heard some accounts of, people actually, I heard from people initially was that, people had, were chanting and booing, and people were jumping into the water, and there was chaos with the Coast Guard chasing the kayakers and endangering people, and they're taking enough of the climbers up to let the ship through, and people were crying when it went through. But I also heard another account from someone that there was actually a certain number of people, so I don't know how many, who were actually, cheering when the thing went through, which is you know, inevitable. So, you know, the battle lines are drawn, folks. The people who are, you know, to the death tied into this death machine aren't going to give it up. And, you know, it's still progress in the American way to them. You know, I believe I've destroyed that illusion at least, and I hope most of my listeners have. And if I haven't, well, call in. Let's have a conversation. So, yeah, was anybody out there at that? What are the next steps? What's the next campaign? I was talking about the Hike the Pipe issue last week. That's another campaign against fossil fuels coming up. Yeah, what do you have to say about that? Looks like we already have one caller. Shane, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul.
Hey.
Hey, first time, long time. I met you at a Resistance Ecology conference. Thanks for promoting that, by the way. I just wanted to say a lot of people were calling Abe and Joe yesterday, blaming the police for blocking the lanes. But, you know, I kind of think, like, it wasn't necessarily their fault. They kind of, you know, the people that were trying to cross the bridge, you know.
We're talking about the St. John's Bridge, of course.
Yeah, the St. John's Bridge, yeah. The protesters weren't blocking the lanes, but, you know, I kind of think that the police were sort of offering, like, some protection, you know, from angry motorists in a way.
Well, that's what I heard initially because, you know, they allowed their support crew, one for each of the climbers, to stay up there, and even they had water supplies for them. And I heard that they actually let them stay there because there is the secure ropes where one was a safety was attached to the upper bar of the bridge, which could be unloosed. But, you know, the real safeties were down below or the first level. But, you know, they just didn't want, you know, that's what I heard, that the police were actually letting people stay there as kind of a security because, you know, you could really endanger people if you wanted to. So.
Right, yeah, exactly. And, a lot of people were giving praise to Charlie Hales yesterday, and I just wanted to say, remind people, you know, this is the same guy that just sold the reservoirs to Joe Flicker and CH2M Hill. And, you know, it just seems like, you know, he let Occupy go on for months, because it actually didn't disrupt any sort of capitalist enterprise directly. But, you know, they shut down the Red Bull event to let the Portland Spirit through on Saturday. And, you know, the protesters were there at St. John's. You know, they were prepared to go for at least a week. And, you know, Charlie shut it down. He could have had the police, you know, fall back. But
yeah,
anyway.
I mean, yeah, the question of, like, the role and position and ability of politicians is an endless discussion. And I think we're all in difficult positions wherever we are in this system. You know, I think we should first acknowledge that.
Right.
And, you know, to the extent that, yeah, I mean, obviously a mayor of a large American city was obviously going to be limited in, you know, I mean, unless they're like a real open socialist like Shama Swant in Seattle, you know, was mayor, who knows what, you know, she would probably get huge, huge pushback and who knows what else if she was that. It's difficult to get elected to high office if you're truly, you know, working against the system.
Right, that is a good point. But I guess that's all I had to share. So anyways, just checking in with you and keep up the good work.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. I hope I didn't dominate that conversation there. That's a reflection on last week's events, the Shell No Actions. We're talking about that. You heard on Joe and Abe, they had their own take on it. They were very excited about it, as we all are. And that's good because it's good to see people standing up and taking bold, direct action. You know, I have my own criticisms of sort of these, for all that they can be effective, and that was an effective action in terms of getting worldwide attention. There's no doubt about that. Hats off to the planning and execution of that action, because I've been involved in some direct actions, and they don't always go as well as that. Let's admit it. But on the other hand, I think there's also something to be said about these kind of these high-tech, you know, highly disciplined, you know, highly skilled actions coming from these planned by these groups that are, you know, outside the local area versus, you know, what if we had 10,000 people occupy the Broadway Bridge and the Steel Bridge, something like that? What would have happened? Could we have pulled it off? Is that, you know, as I said, I wasn't involved in the planning. I have to make that clear. So this is all, I hate the term Monday morning quarterbacking because I really don't like the sport of football. I'm sure there's some other equivalent. You know, it's all after the fact. But that's me talking, and I'd like to hear you talk. We have a full slate of callers. Next up, Martin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I'm really happy about that demonstration at the St. John's Bridge. I wasn't there, but I was glad to see that it happened. I just have, like, one piece of information to pass along. Bernie Sanders is going to be in town on August the 9th. And I'm not quite sure where he's going to appear, maybe at the Memorial Coliseum, but maybe somebody could call in and say where. But I'd just like to pass that information along.
He's going to be at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum at 6, I believe, on Sunday. That's true.
Yeah, I thought that, people could come out and show support for his presidential bid.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's another item for our calendar. I'm not actually sure, Engineer Steve. What about talking about presidential candidates on the air? Do you know about that?
We can talk about them, but we can't endorse anyone.
We can talk about them, but we can't endorse anyone. There you go. But callers can call in and endorse. Is that right? Oh, they can. Okay. So.
Well, I will endorse Bernie Sanders. I think he's the best of anything we got out there, and it would be nice if he could do better than Dennis Kucinich or Ralph Nader.
Well, on that note, you know, I would just like to, you know, I could express my personal opinions, which are actually rather critical. I would direct people's attention to the Counterpunch website, which has been publishing a long series of very critical articles of Bernie Sanders' campaign. So I think those are worth, you know, for the sake of debate. I know there's a lot of people very passionate, and that's good. You know, it's good to get passionate. But I also think it's good to maintain our critical thinking, especially, you know, our critique of the institutional dominant parties, which have a stranglehold over our political life in this country. And whether Bernie Sanders is actually challenging that or not, I think is a good question, one to pose to him.
Okay, well, thanks for taking my call.
All right, so Sunday at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum at 6 o'clock. Thank you, Martin, for calling in. Let's go to our next caller. Edie, you're on the air.
Hello. I am not male-gendered people, and I was a kayaktivist Wednesday and Thursday, and what people can do is give money to Rising Tide for the outrageous fines against the detainees and the arrestees.
What are the fines? How much are the fines, do you know?
I think it varies with different people, so I'd rather not waste our time on that.
Okay.
So you can give money to Rising Tide. You can give money to and thank Backbone in Seattle that brought down so many kayaks and arranged for things. You can go, for example, to Sandy River or Clackamas River Outfitters who rented out kayaks but gave permission for certain kayaks to be with the arrestables, to be impounded, destroyed, or sold by the police. So that was a donation and a risk on their part that's generous, and we can thank them. We can be a part of the Climate Change Coalition of over 37 organizations. And
as Climate Action Coalition, I believe.
Yes.
Okay.
We can support the diversity, and that we Friday night there was at Cathedral Park. Thank you to the activists and to Greenpeace climbers and their support crew but also an affirmation that we are committed to diversity and overcoming oppression in all forms. We see how this whole materialism, capitalism, the whole system oppresses all, but we're united with Black Lives Matter. We're united with ending mass incarceration, water as a human right, Puerto Ricans to not be colonized. So the recognizing the common ground and the connecting the dots and getting out the support for all of us. Another thing that was a concern for me, there was a woman that came there saying that she had a friend who had talked with the CEO of Shell in Europe, and he had said, keep up the protests, that they really are considering stopping it, the drilling from internal purposes, you know, the cost and everything, that we do make a difference, that we quit too soon. KBOO could have gotten the word out. They did not interrupt Democracy Now! And other programs when people calling in to the KBOO desk saying, you know, get the word out. And KBOO was not doing that.
Okay, let me stop on that. Let me stop on that point. That's an important point because, you know, I talk sometimes about KBOO, you know, internal functioning a little bit, about, you know, how people can get involved, intervene. So that's actually an issue. It's in our programmer's contract, apparently, that programming can be interrupted for important on breaking news stories. And, you know, every institution has its culture, and it's something we really haven't gotten used to doing. Democracy Now! Is a little difficult because it's a, you know, it's a pre-taped thing. So that's, you know, if people feel like that in particular is something that's important to them, you know, people should feel free to call up KBOO and talk to, you know, our station managers, talk to our public news and public affairs directors, you know, and get involved, come down and volunteer. You know, there's a volunteer orientation every month. You know, that's just one small thing. You know, it's not a criticism, but it's a observation that we do not do a lot of, you know, breaking news stories during our regular programming. And that's something I feel strongly that could be encouraged. A discussion could happen about that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Another thing is that I overheard the local Coast Guard and Multnomah County Sheriff's folks indicate that had they just had like 20 more people, they could not have shut it down. And they could not have shut down the protesters and our constitutional rights. And Seneca would have been held back a lot longer. So
it's hard to know.
We had the kayaks available. We had the boats and canoes available. We just didn't have people knowing about it who would have gladly come had they known. And there were the kind of people who were listening to KBOO actually at the same time. So it's something we can do that. Now, also, we can do a lot more. We have the, what's it called, Obama's Clean Power Plan, which is baloney. They're saying that they're supposed to be reducing the carbon dioxide emissions from coal, from electric power plants. However, that plan is to increase development of what they call natural gas, which is methane gas. Methane gas, we used to think, in 5 years, was 84 times the heating capacity of carbon dioxide, and over 20 years was like 74%. Now they're finding out that within 5 years it's over 100 times, but it's even greater than that because the models they were using to know how much worse methane is to carbon dioxide did not take into account all the interacting things that happen, and they were not taking into account the extreme harm that comes with fracking and the coordination of the different greenhouse gases with each other that are part of the fracking process. So,
okay, so Edie,
we do not want to pass the plan that Obama put out because that is really a horrible pack of wolves in sheep's clothing because of increasing methane So we want to work together to stop that.
Okay, great. Well, you've thrown out Edie, yes. hold on, slow down, Edie, slow down. Okay, you've given us a lot to consider, and we have a bunch of other callers. So I thank you for all that great information and those insights, and appreciate your call. Thanks, Edie. And on that note, I want to refer a article, the biggest news source of global warming, fracking. This just came out August 4th on the No Fracking Way website. A device community commonly used to measure the methane that leaks from industrial sources may greatly underestimate those emissions, said an inventor of the technology the device relies on. The claim, published Tuesday in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, suggests that the amount of escaped methane, a potent greenhouse gas, could be far greater than accepted estimates from scientists, industry, and regulators. The new paper focuses on a much-heralded report sponsored by the Environmental Defense Fund and published by University of Texas researchers in 2013. So that's the so-called bridge fuel that Obama and others are so relying on, in fact, is just rampantly releasing methane, which, as Edie rightly points out, is a vastly more immediate source of global warming, even than carbon dioxide. We do have more callers. I mentioned there's a bunch of articles I've been accumulating here. So I just want to note some of these. Let's see here. Alaska's terrifying wildfire season and what it says about climate change. This is truly a scary article. I didn't write down the source. I got the source of all these others, but that's that. A new article by Robert Hunsaker on Counterpunch a couple days ago, The Perfectly Nasty Ocean Storm. Let's see. These large die-offs. Mass mortality events, they're called. There's a new study that's actually quantifying. I mean, quantifying the apocalypse as it happens. That's why I sometimes joke around KBOO that we're documenting the apocalypse here. And, you know, there's certainly no joy in this. I'm not making light of it. I'm trying to, surf with what's happening. You know, we can't succumb. We can't let it smash us, overwhelm us. Whatever happens, we gotta stay with it somehow. And it is rapidly picking up speed. And we could just not report all this stuff. We could not talk about it. I think that's not the best approach. I don't know what the best approach is exactly. And hopefully we can figure it out together. So anyway, recent shifts in the occurrence, cause, and magnitude of animal mass mortality events. Say, recent study. There have been recent shifts in the magnitudes. Every biologist I spoke with who is researching mass mortality events said that many wildlife die-offs today really could be signals of serious problems with the ecological fundamentals of the planet. J.B. McKinnon on Animal Deaths and Human Anxieties, The New Yorker, April 21st, 2015. And it's not just climate change. So, are we just impotently, observing what's going on, like the BP oil gusher? Is that what's happening? A lot of people are getting the sense of urgency and are acting. There's a lot more people getting involved. A lot more people want to plug in after that Shell action, which is good. Of course, Rising Tide, 350, Portland 350 PDX. As Edie said, the Climate Action Coalition. Those are all resources you can get involved in, contribute to. Another article, drought may stunt forests' ability to capture carbon. Another feedback loop, as if we needed another one. That's from Climate Central. The new climate, quote, normal, abrupt sea level rise and predictions of civilizational collapse by Dar Jamail, truthout.org, just yesterday. On a good note, EPA oil terminal plan doesn't pass muster. That's the mega oil terminal plan for Vancouver. That's in the Columbian, of a couple days ago. Quote, glaciers, quote, have shrunk to lowest level in 120 years. That's from the Straits Times in Singapore. And I haven't posted my last couple shows. I will do my best to get this up on the website with all these links there to the all you apocalypse obsessives. The scariest part of climate change is what we don't know. That was yesterday. That's in The Ecologist online. California Rocky Fire, why it fits a global trend. Christian Science Monitor, everybody's talking about the. The Atlantic, is anywhere on Earth safe from climate change, from 2 days ago. This subject is just exploding all over the place. So we've got a full slate of callers again. Let's go to Barth. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We met at the Yes Men presentation down at Portland State.
Right, right.
Which I very much enjoyed. You stated earlier that there were, you know, people booing, and you said that they will hold on to this in a death grip until, you know.
No, there were people cheering as it went through, I guess, was the.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was alluding to, but misstating. But you said, you know, that this is their mindset and that's all they have. Well, one of the things that the articles you just mentioned and the increasing, you know, radial waves of understanding are going to promote is those people having another option, having another dose of reality, having an alternative that says, you know, well, my lights aren't going to go out tomorrow if we don't let them drill in the Arctic. And in the meantime, can we do meaningful things so that the society we live in and the society that exists in the world doesn't have to crash and burn entirely, that we don't have to hold on until the last drop of oil or the last forest or the last tuna fish are dead, you know, that we can make other choices going forward. I appreciated Edie's wide-ranging suggestions and recommendations. I appreciate her being out and being active and telling us what was going on the ground. I didn't hear the whole show, so I don't know what else has all gone on. But these are important things. And again, people, you got to support your radio station to have access to this kind of information, because most of the country doesn't have any idea about these things and specific aspects that you're bringing up.
And get involved, too. I mean, you know, we could have had more news reporters there. Yeah, like I said, there's lots of aspects of KBOO itself that's not quite, in my opinion, up to speed with the urgency of the situation that we are facing. And we need to have conversations internally at KBOO. We need to have conversations, community conversations with our listeners about this. And, you know, as a caller said a couple weeks ago, this is a patriarchal death cult. That was like the last words of the show. I didn't get a chance to really follow up on that. I've kind of wanted to. Those words have been ringing in my brain ever since. But, agree.
I think that you could certainly have a whole show about that specific
And I will at some
idea
point.
Yeah, and thought chain, because, you know, patriarchy is about control. It is also about leading from above and obedience to some, you know, authority figure, sky god, president, political party, army. You know, you can choose any one of them. They all have these huge ramifications for all of us. I'm going to let you go ahead and get the next caller, but thanks again for your show.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. That's interesting. Someone I met for the second time at the demonstrations, got in a long conversation, and she mentioned a book, which I've had for years and years and years, and I've never read. And I'm finally reading it, and I really thank her for that. Anyway, The Chalice and the Blade by Rian Eisler. I know that's something that has influenced a lot of people, probably quite a few people who are listening, or some. Certainly influenced a lot of people I've known. And I'm finally getting around to reading it. It's like my favorite adage, better too late than never. Better laugh than cry. So anyway, that's a good book. Whether it'll do us any good at this point, I don't know. But it certainly talks about the overthrow of partnership society, a different way of living in a settled agrarian civilized society even. Anyway, it's making me think. Let's go to our next caller. Harry, you're on the air.
Ah, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Earlier today, you were talking about the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the beast in the room that no one wants to talk about is overpopulation. And they think this is driving our need for oil. We have 330 million people in the United States right now, and we all want to live a middle-class life, not including the 7 billion people all around the world.
Well, let me just push back real quick, because it's overpopulation. The only problem I have with people bringing that up is it often is brought up in isolation. The problem is not overpopulation per se. I mean, we became like, it's there's a whole history to it that I think you have to include in saying that. There's a reason why, the Europeans expanded their population at the expense of other populations and using other populations to expand their own our own population, and at the expense of the natural world and all the resources, and now the climate, as we see, it's a cumulative impact situation. So I think we have to, it just seems kind of mechanistic when we mention overpopulation, it's a multiplying effect with overpopulation.
Exactly. Overpopulation is a multiplying effect, and that's what's causing all of this. Our need for oil, and unless we could find something different, but right now that's our need. Next for the Arctic, the protest that we had, we can continue this protest by boycotting Shell gasoline and divesting in Shell. That will get the message to Shell that we're not very happy about what's going on in the Arctic.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and of course the media is not going to broadcast this boycott that's going on, so it's probably up to graffiti artists and taggers to get the message out of boycotting.
Well, I certainly can't encourage anything like that on the air.
Okay, yeah, I know, but Greenpeace can't either. They'll be fined. So it's probably up to the graffiti artists and the taggers to get the message through, because the media won't do it.
All right, well, thank you for calling. Appreciate
okay,
it. All right. Coming up on KBOO 9 on Political Perspectives, host Doug... Oh, no, that's an old one. Let's see here. At 9 o'clock on Political Perspectives, we'll hear a presentation against the death penalty given at the annual meeting of Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty in June. Keynote speakers were actor Mike Farrell of the TV series MASH and Becky O'Neill McBrayer, who lost both of her parents to murder. 10 o'clock on air, Eris Cascades off today, so we'll jump right into Flashpoints, investigative New Jerusalem journalism with host Janice Bernstein. Today, we'll examine President Obama's recent statements about climate change, then about National Security Agency's demands for a backdoor into all commercial data encryption programs. 11 o'clock, the KBOO Bike Show. That's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. We've only got about 10 minutes left. I did want to mention one thing. I want to kind of, get into this idea more of internal discussion. I think we don't have enough, internal discussion, but within, quote, the environmental movement, between different groups, within KBOO. We just need more of a culture of kind of mutual confrontation, supportive mutual confrontation. So I just want to kind of push back on a couple points a caller made yesterday. Analogy of mobilizing against climate change, like the World War II mobilization or the New Deal. Those are two that are brought up constantly, even worse, like the Manhattan Project. But if you look at those examples, that's exactly, you know, going back to this book, The Chalice and the Blade, which basically says that, you know, the very brief nutshell that, you know, this, the male sky god, aggressive, you know, horse riding, male pastoralist from the steppes, the marginal steppes of, you know, Siberia, or, you know, anyway, that came in and took over the more matrilineal partnership cooperative societies of the Near East and other areas back, you know, around like five to 6,000 years ago, and 4,000 to 6,000 years ago. Anyway, and instituted, you know, a warfare-based society that we've been living in ever since. And all the, you know, technological and social developments sort of feed into the warfare society and distort the rest of the society. That's, you know, basically what we're still living in. So, of course, they're going to mobilize massively for World War II. Of course, they're going to mobilize massively in the New Deal to save the capitalist economy, which is based upon competition and warfare and profits, and not on sharing and mutual support. Of course, they're going to build the atomic bomb, which institutes, you know, what kind of greater, you know, representation of sky god supremacy than a terrifying explosive device that falls from the sky. But that the problem in using those analogies is we have no real precedent for making a cooperative international response to what has been created by this system. So we've got a problem. And the kind of urgency that tends to get, you know, all these patriarchal institutions and individuals all excited and slobbering over profits, it's not the kind of urgency they won't feel that same sense of urgency to deal with. In fact, it puts people in denial. So anyway, I introduce that subject near the end of the hour. Again, that's a subject I've really been wanting to explore in greater depth. I think we don't really talk in depth enough about the nature of the beast, as it were. What really is it that we're facing? You know, people call it capitalism. People call it this. People call it that. What is the true name of the beast? Boy, getting into some deep stuff here. So, yeah, I mean, what is the proper analogy for what it is we're facing and how to deal with it? Because look, you know, the Fukushima is still this gushing geyser of radioactivity. What it needed immediately was a massive international intervention, coordinated, you know, a private-public partnership to confront that, bring the best technical experts to bear. They didn't. They let the Portland, the Tokyo General Electric or whatever it is, to deal with it, and they didn't. And they're not. And we're still not. There is some assistance quietly, you know, happening, but not a massive coordinated response. And it's still leaking massive amounts. They got these bags of radioactive water sitting there, lined up, these thousands and thousands. It's insane. Just like we need a massive coordinated response to international climate change, not some of these market mechanisms that Obama's proposing and that Edie is rightfully criticizing this plan. Yeah, all of a sudden we get two more callers. Sean, you're on the air.
Well, you covered a lot of ground there. And I'll just simply say, if we're really honest about ourselves, the enemy and the beast is us, period.
But what does that mean exactly?
It means us individually, each person. You know, we can.
But how does that? How the? What's the specifics of that?
Because we're all, as John Muir said, when you try to pick out anything by itself, you find everything interconnected. Chief Seattle said the same thing. You know, we can sit here and try to find blame on the wealthy, and we.
No, I was talking about.
Wait! You had your say.
Okay.
So
okay.
Let me have mine. So all I'm saying is that we can sit here, because the tendency is for humans to have a side about something and feel that their side is better and demonize the other or find fault in the other. When the moment we do that, there's a lot of projection going on, and we can turn around and look at ourselves in the mirror.
But I just want to ask you...
One way or another, we're interconnected. So I don't want to take up a lot of time.
No, but I just want to ask you, who was saying that there's sides being set up? Because I don't think I was doing that. That's why I'm curious.
No, and so I'm just giving my opinion.
But who are you? What are you responding to? Is what I'm asking.
What am I responding to?
You're saying that there's a danger in setting up sides. I wasn't setting up sides. I'm saying there's a beast, and we need to talk about what the beast is.
Yeah, and so you were saying who's the beast, and I was simply saying, if we're honest, the beast is us. It's every human being on the planet.
Well, I think it is and it isn't, and it both is and isn't, and
well,
it neither
fine, and
is
that's
nor
your opinion,
isn't.
So I'm just giving my opinion. And
well, no, I'm trying to have a conversation. I'm saying, does that describe it fully? Because is there also something that's not just us individually?
Well, I think, you know, there's so many different opinions and arguments that could be made. And you know, I was stirring a lot of things to think about how can I tie in what I was going to say in a short period of time compared to the things that I've heard and know about been going on with this one issue. Like, for instance, there was a professor who just talked down in Eugene who's from Norway, Norgard, and she's specifically saying, you know, of any place where people should not be in denial about what's going on, because what she's saying is what I think a lot of us are aware of, is that people in general seem to be very much in denial about what's going on, and they're not really getting out and expressing more anger or more, just to do something about it. Like you're talking about, people need to get together and have more, let's say, confrontational communication about some of this stuff. And because, like in Norway, they're seeing the snows are coming 2 to 3 months later. You know, so because they live in a more extreme environment, there should seem to be more of a pushback, but there doesn't. And what I'm getting at is that because humans deep down know that we are all responsible. It's like the kayaker and so forth. I'm not finding fault. But as soon as we say that we're a so-called environmentalist and we do good over here, we're also, most of us, jumping in our car and burning the very fossil fuels that are helping to perpetuate this. Or there's a lot of things that we're all buying that are helping to perpetuate. And that was part of my simple comment was going to be,
right.
And that is that there's the simple statement about recycling that's reduce, reuse, recycle. And it's a simple thing, but I remember reading a book. It was actually the very first book that Elizabeth Gilbert wrote before she wrote the big book, Eat, Pray, Love. And that was a book called The Last American Male. And what it's about this fellow who lives very simply. It's a really actually a great book, who started the Turtle Island Preserve by gradually acquiring this land and living off the land outside of Asheville, North Carolina. And it's really fantastic, but one of the things he brought up, he said, you know, there should be two other words in that simple phrase, and that is reconsider and refuse. And that simple statement is so profound, because if each one of us stops every time we think of jumping in our car or buying another thing, because whether you buy another thing that it's recycled or it's brand new, you are perpetuating the very thing that we're talking about here.
Okay, well, there's only 2 minutes left. I just want to say one quick response, because we have to go pretty soon here,
yeah.
Is there is a systemic aspect as well. See, I agree with what you're saying, but a deeper and a wider and a broader conversation is, what is it that's not just of ourselves as well? There's also a systemic thing that's all virtually has become virtually autonomous.
Yeah,
of our own individual actions. So that's
I think you can call it autonomous, but I think you can also call it evolution, because there's the whole argument about are things nature?
Right. Well, that's a complex evolution. Argument that we're unfortunately not going to be able to get into. And
I know, but evolution, yeah. I just quickly will just say, is evolution is not only about shows that there's proof that there's cooperation, but there's also proof to show that there is a so-called competition and domination as well. And
right.
I think we fight against that all the time, and it's what led to this, and I think it's just part of the human condition.
Okay, well, thank you for calling. But actually, the chalice and the blade actually has a great response to that, which is says that social evolution went in a different direction than it had gone previously for particular reasons that we need to understand as well. And I apologize to the other caller who won't be able to get on the air, because we had that nice little interchange there. And that's a conversation that needs to continue, I think. Is it too late? Are we into the apocalypse too deeply that we can't do anything? I don't know. These are heavy questions. Give me a, you know, send me a line, paulrkabu@kabu@gmail.com, or, you know, call me up afterwards at the front desk, 231-8032. Thank you so much for listening. I will put this up on the website with all these connections to these articles and these organizations. Get involved. It's time. Stay tuned.
2 miles down the Delaware shore, there were geese in the marshes out looking for food. They got stuck where they stood in the oncoming crude, and it's oil, oil. They're drifting to the sea.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Aurora Colony Vineyards 2015 Jazz Festival, August 9th, with doors opening at 2 p.m. and performances from 3 to 9 p.m. The Aurora Colony Vineyards is located at 21338 Oak Lane Northeast in Aurora, Oregon. Performers include Tony Lincoln, the Ron Steen Band, Picante Latin Jazz, Tom Grant, and many more. Again, that's the Aurora Colony Vineyards Jazz Festival, August 9th, from 2 to 9 p.m. More information about directions and ticket prices can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Up next on Political Perspectives, we'll hear a presentation against the death penalty given at the annual meeting of Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty in June.